Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Bava Mitzia Daf Tzadi. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a specially marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage and then go to option 2. If you're already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief formatted introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the marked Daf before the shiur. If you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. Today's shiur begins at the bottom line of Daf Pei Tes Amid Beis. Before we begin the actual Gemara, let us glance in the margin where we have a topic heading. In this case, we call it a Nosei Klani, a general topic heading, and we indicate Ad Sadi Aleph Amid Aleph. So we have, in fact, a singular general topic that will preoccupy us for the balance of today's shiur. That is Lo Sachsom Shor B'Disho. We're quoting here a pasuk that says that you shall not muzzle your animal while it is threshing grains. That halacha from the Torah is designed to enable the animal while working on the grains, namely it's trampling on grains, thereby accomplishing their threshing, the animal is able to eat from it at the same time. Now the Gemara, bottom line, Tonu Rabbanan, Porois Hamerachsois Bitvua. Poros that are involved in this process called Merachsos. We look at the Rashi at the bottom line of the Rashi, at the second to last line of the Rashi commentary. He says, Amarasos Bitvua Shishurin Surin Bimayim. They would soak the barley in water, Umiapshin, Oisan Bitanur, and then dry them out in an oven, the doshin oison the poros lasir kliposon, and after that, barley grains would be threshed by cows that trample upon them to remove their klipa, their shell or their peel. Vehu chushla, that's known throughout the Talmud by the term chushla. So poros, cows that are trampling or threshing upon the barley as we just described. Now we continue at the top of Daf Tzadi Omid Aleph. V'hadoshois betruma umayser, animals that are threshing grains that were set aside as a tithe, the truma tithe which is given to the kohanim, or the meiser tithe. The meiser, Rashi describes, would be a situation where a Levi took the grains that he would be entitled to, but he took them early before they were threshed. He took them while still in a stalk form. And so we have a Levi that has meiser grains that need to be threshed. Ordinarily, you wouldn't have Truma and Meiser, you wouldn't have these tithes at a point in time prior to the threshing. There's no obligation to tithe at that point. It hasn't reached the Gemar Melocha for tithing. So how do you have a situation where the cows are threshing Truma and Meiser? So Rashi, as Rashi explained, the Kohen and the Levi took the grains while they were still in their stalk form. So if the cows are threshing grains as truma or meiser, einoi oiver mishum bal tachson, if he happens to muzzle up the animal, the owner would not be in violation of the prohibition of muzzling while threshing. Avol, however, mitnei maris ho'ayin, bad impression, the way it looks, it doesn't look good to have an animal threshing while muzzled. The general public doesn't necessarily know what it is threshing. So we say, mevi bul me oisoi hamin, one would bring a fistful, bul is a mole egrof, a fistful of that item that the animal is threshing, v'toyle lo betraskelin shebefia, and he would put this fistful of grain in a basket that's swung around the animal's neck. A traskelin is a sal, a basket, that's near its mouth. Befia shebefia means near the animal's mouth, so that it could eat from it while threshing. So that, in effect, the animal won't be muzzled, but at the same time, the animal is not eating from these, we'll say, these grains that are not bound by the prohibition of lo sachsam shor b'disho. Reb Shimon Bar Yochai omer mevi karshinim v'toyle lo. Reb Shimon Bar Yochai says that the owner would bring karshinim, that type of animal feed. Karshinim yofos lo min akol. Karshinim is a type of, we'll say, animal feed that is the best of all. Now we raise a question, a long question, in the form of a contradiction. V'ramini poros hamarachsos b'tvua eino over mishum bal tachsom. Cows that are threshing in the merachsos context that we described before, there is no violation of Baal Tafsum. This, by the way, is similar to what we said before. We didn't explain, though, and the reason for it is that the Gemar Melacha has already been experienced, so that you're at a point in time, let's see, beyond which the prohibition of muzzling the animal applies. At this point, you'll notice we have a dashed underlining, v'hadoshes betruma u'maiser oiver mishum bal tachsoim. Here is our point of contradiction. Notice at the top line we said hadoshes betruma u'maiser eino over, and here the contrary. V'nochri hadosh beporosoi shel Yisrael, an idol worshipper that threshes his grains using an animal owned by a Jew, eino oiver mishum bal tachsom. There is no violation of lo sachsom in the event that a nochri has muzzled up a Jewish owned animal during threshing. V'Yisrael hadosh beporosu shel nochri oiver mishum bal tachsom. However, a Jew that uses an animal owned by an idol worshipper, and the Jew muzzles up the animal while threshing, is in fact in violation of Baal Tafsom. Kashya Truma Truma, Kashya Maisra Maisra. We have a contradiction between the two sources regarding threshing Truma while animal muzzled, and a contradiction regarding threshing Maisra while an animal is muzzled. Bishlama truma atruma lo kashya. As far as the seeming contradiction regarding truma, there is no contradiction. Kan betruma kan begidule truma. It depends. If there is, if it's actual truma, then there is no violation of lo sachsom. However, if one is threshing grains that grew as a result of having planted truma grains and they grew into new stalks, we say that they have a truma status only on a rabbinic level. But midoraisa, they are considered non-truma. And therefore, the prohibition of lo sachsom shor b'disho will apply. So as far as the seeming contradiction regarding the muzzled animal while threshing truma, there is no contradiction, as we just indicated. Now, do note we have some markings that we'll point out immediately before going any further. The triangle is used to resolve the contradiction regarding the matter of truma, as we just did. Later on the Omid, you'll see another triangle. In fact, we've used a numbering system as well alongside the Gemara text. If you skim down, you'll notice a second triangle. That represents an additional resolution of the truma, the seeming truma contradiction, as well as a third triangle later. Diamonds will start appearing in the Gemara. They are attempts to resolve the contradiction regarding threshing with a muzzled animal of miser grains. So in the meantime, we've resolved the issue of the contradiction regarding truma, threshing with a muzzled animal. Ela miser a miser kasho. However, regarding the issue of miser, we still have a difficulty. V'chitema, and if you try to resolve the miser a miser nami lo kasha and say that there is no contradiction regarding the miser topic by saying kan be miser kan be gidule miser, the source that exempts is where it's actual miser that's being threshed, as opposed to gidule miser, stalks of grain that grew as a result of planting miser grains. Bishlama gidule truma. That we can understand, that gidule truma is considered truma on a rabbinic level, and therefore you need the source to tell me that since on a deraisa level it's not considered truma, there is a violation of lo safsam sharbis, you do not muzzle the animal while threshing gidule truma. Ela gidule meiser hulin ninhu. That which grows from miser grains that were planted, that's obviously chulin, obviously non-miser, and therefore it would be what we call pshita, too obvious for the need for a source to tell me that he is in violation of threshing gidule miser. This non gidule tevel ugidule miser sheni chulin, that which grows from planting untithed grains, or that which grows from planting miser grains, they are clearly chulin. So if that's the point, then we can't use that as a resolution of that which is in the Tanaic source. Tanaic source has to tell me something that I wouldn't have so easily known on my own. Elo lo kashi. Here, notice the diamond is coming to resolve the contradiction regarding the issue of miser. Ha, the miser rishon, ha, the miser sheni. There are two different kinds of miser. There's miser rishon, which is a tithe given, 10% of one's harvest given to a levy. And there's miser sheni, which is an additional 10% that one takes to Jerusalem. So in one case, the muzzling of the animal while threshing will result in a violation of lo safsam shor b'disho, and in the other case there it will be no violation. You might be asking which is which. So with regard to meiser rishon, one who would thresh while muzzled, while the animal is muzzled, he will be in violation of lo safsam. You'll notice the Tosfos in Dibur HaMasel Kan, he says Kan b'Meiser Rishon Demikri Disho. The pasuk itself says Lo Sachsom Shor B'Disho, that you shall not muzzle the ox while doing your own threshing. Meiser Rishon is a tithe given to a levy, and he derives personal benefit from it without, we'll say, other ritual restrictions. It's considered his personal. His personal property, his personal item. As opposed to Meiser Sheni, that's the tithe that you bring to Jerusalem and eat it there. If one were to thresh it, being that it has this aspect of additional aspect of holiness to it, you would not be in violation. It's not considered, a personal possession, and therefore the posuk of lo safsam shor b'disho would not apply. another approach to resolve the contradiction regarding Meiser is Viboy Sema Hova Hoba Meiser Sheni. Both sources are talking, in fact, about Meiser Sheni. Velo Kashian, still there's no contradiction. Ha Rebbe Meir Ha Rebbe Yehuda. The sources above are authored by two different Tanaic opinions. Ha Rebbe Meir, Diomar Meiser Sheni, Momon Govoahu. Rebbe Meir's approach to Meiser Sheni is that it is Momon Govoah, literally the high money. What do I mean, the high money? It means that it's something that is, we'll say, owned by heaven. It's in the realm of that which is sanctified. And as such, it's not considered your own. The fact that you're entitled to eat it is a special provision that one is granted from on high, that if you bring it to Jerusalem, so you're entitled to it. We'll call it a provision or an entitlement. And therefore, since it's momon gavoah, it's not really yours per se. Therefore, if you were to muzzle the animal while threshing it, there is no violation, because the pasuk speaks in terms of lo sasum shor b'disho, thou shalt not muzzle while threshing your own personal grains. So according to Rabbi Meir, that views Meiser Sheni as momon gavoah, you would not be in violation of chasima, of muzzling. Ha Rabbi Yehuda, the source that indicated muzzling it would be prohibited in the case of Meiser, it is once again Meiser Sheni, but according to Rabbi Yehuda, that says, Yomar Meiser Sheni, Momon Hedyot, who it's considered your personal item. And therefore, one would not be allowed to thresh it with a muzzled animal. The Gemara asks, and the Gemara's question right now is something that we included in our explanation much earlier, but here the Gemara's Hechi Domi. How could it be that you have Meiser before the grains have been threshed? The Chiyuv of Meiser doesn't set in until after the threshing process. In fact, it doesn't set in until stage or operation called miruach, where after the grains have been threshed and winnowed, they're then piled up and the pile is smoothed out, and that's called miruach. Only at that point does the meiser obligation set in. How then can we speak about threshing that which is already meiser? The Gemara answers, Kagon Shigdimo Bishibolim. And as I said earlier, we explained this. It's a case where the tithing actually took place earlier than obligated. Now here there's a very fine point, and that is that there's a certain stage at which you are obligated to tithe. There is, however, a possibility of an earlier stage where if you do the tithing, it's considered an effective tithing, even though you weren't obligated. And that is in the case, or at the stage, that the grains are still in their stalk form, namely before they have been threshed. So if the tithing took place in the shibolim, in the stalk form, and the owner declared the various tithes upon those grains, the tithing is effective, and it's in a case like that that we can describe the threshing, the disha of the various tithed grains. The Gemara asks, Ula Rebbe Yehuda. There's a bit of text that we want to add. A change in the text, not an addition, but regarding Rebbe Yehuda, we said would be mechayev for the threshing of the grains, of the Meiser Sheni, being that it's called Momon Hedyot. Still, Ha Boi Choma. Is there not the requirement of it being in within the walls of Jerusalem before we can call it your grains. Until you bring it, chomo is the wall. Before you bring it to within the walls of Jerusalem, you're not allowed to eat it. And if you're not allowed to eat it, then why would the pasuk of lo sachsom shor b'disho apply? It's not really yours. You don't have access to it. So the Gemara answers, kagon, that which Rabbi Yehuda tells you, that for threshing Meiser Sheni grains, there is the violation of Lo Sachsam, threshing the Meiser Sheni grains while the animal is muzzled, Kagon Shedosh Lifnim Michomas Beis Pagi, where he threshed the Meiser Sheni grains within the outer walls of Jerusalem. Chomas Beis Pagi is the reference to the walls that surround the outer limits of Jerusalem. So if you're within those walls, you're within an area that entitles you, or through, at which point you're entitled to eat from those grains. So they're considered yours, according to Rav Yehuda, and hence the prohibition of threshing with a muzzled animal. Iboy Asema lo kashya. Here, a third attempt, or a third resolution of the sources regarding Meiser. Kan b'Meiser vadai, kan b'Meiser demai. The exemption is applicable when you're talking about certain Meiser. Certain Meiser means you know that these grains have never been tithed. So when you tithe them, that is, there's no issue of doubt, and therefore it's certainly in the category of Meiser. And if we're going to continue, let's say, talking about Meiser Sheni, so it is certainly something that would not lead to a violation of muzzling the animal while threshing. However, Kanda Meiser Demai is a reference to grains that you acquired from an Amoritz, from an ignoramus. And we say that on a rabbinic level, you have to tithe that which you acquired from the Amoritz. On a Torah level, since the majority of Amoratzim tithe, Midoraisa, it's not that tithe isn't necessary to separate. So once you separated this rabbinic required tithe, on a total level, it's considered your own produce, your own grains, and therefore muzzling an animal while threshing Meiser of Demai would result in the violation of Lo Sachsam Shor B'Disho, the prohibition of using the muzzled animal for threshing. Hashta De'osis Lahachi. Now that we've come to this point where we resolve the two sources with this distinction between Vadai versus Demai, Truma Atruma Nami Lo Kashi. We can go back to the issue of the Truma contradiction and offer a new resolution. There, namely, there is no Kashi, no disagreement, no contradiction. Kan Betrumas Vadai, Kan Betrumas Demai. In the case of certain Truma, there is no violation. In the case of truma that you set aside from stuff you bought from a, you acquired from an Amoretz, you would be in violation. The Gemara says, regarding this second approach to the truma resolution, notice we have a long question here. Bishlama Meiser Demai Ika. Grant, we say, as far as the concept of Meiser that has Demai status, that we know exists. Ela Trumas Demai Mi'iko, is there such a thing as Truma that you would separate, that you would need to separate, even on a rabbinic level, from produce acquired from an ignoramus? V'hotanya, we have the following Tanaic source, which will reveal to us that there was never the need for tithing the truma tithe. That's the tithe that one separates from grains and gives to a kohen. That was never included in the rabbinic expectation of tithing from amo oretz, from demai produce. Why not? Because truma was something that was viewed very seriously, even by the ignoramuses. They wouldn't play around with that. They wouldn't. They would certainly have troubled themselves to separate the truma tithe. In addition to the fact that the truma tithe is on a Torah level, it can even be a negligible amount. So it's no, there's no loss to the amoret, so to speak, as opposed to the other tithes, which represent 10% of one's harvest. There, you can imagine the ignoramus would be reticent to tithing. So how can you suggest as a resolution of the truma sources that the source indicating the prohibition is a reference to truma of demai when that doesn't exist? Now let's see the source for that. V'hotanya, af hu bitel es havidui v'gozar al hademai. This is a quote that you're seeing only a partial quote. It's a reference to Yochanan Kohen Gadol. This source comes from Maseches Sota, which reflects a period in history toward the end of the second Beis HaMikdash period, where we'll say certain adjustments or changes were made in the law, in the letter of the law. So he, the Afhu in this source, even he too, that's a reference to Yochanan Kohen Gadol, canceled the need for the recitation of the Vidui. This is a reference to Vidui, Maisris, where at the after the third and sixth year of the sabbatical cycle, the owner of fields makes a declaration, Biarti HaKadosh Min HaBayis V'gam Nasatif L'Levi, I basically took care of all my tithings and I gave what has to be given to a Levi. At that point in history, the Levi no longer received the Truma, the Meiser Rishon tithe, so it would not be accurate for a person to recite that formal passage, V'gam Nasatif L'Levi, and I gave it to Levi when that was no longer in practice. So he voided that, and also Reuch Yochanan Gadol issued a ruling concerning demai. Demai is, once again, it's produce that you acquired from an ignoramus, the law now requiring your having to tithe from it. If you want to use the expression re-tithe, fine, but that's assuming that the Amorites tithed. Lefi shesholach b'chobvu Yisrael v'ra, the Reuchen and Kohen Gadol had investigated, it sent throughout all the borders of Israel, it sent throughout the country an investigation, v'ra, and discovered, he saw, shelo hoyu mafrishin el truma gedola b'vad, that the people were not practicing with diligence tithing, except for truma gedola, the truma, the primary truma tithe, that if not done, Truma Gedola was the only tithe that they cared for, that they took care of. And the other tithes, they weren't as diligent about. So what do we see, though, from this source? That regarding Truma, there was never any need for the separation for the tithing from Amoret's produce. So there doesn't exist such a thing as Trumas Demai. Ela lo kasha. Here is a third approach to the Truma contradiction. And we say Kan Betrumas Meiser Vadai, Kan Betrumas Meiser Demai. So what's Trumas Meiser? Trumas Meiser is 1/10 of the amount that the Levi received as his Meiser Rishon tithe. So now your basic Meiser Rishon, as we indicated before, you can have certain Meiser, and then you can have doubtful Meiser, because that is one of the tithes that the Amoratzim weren't necessarily diligent over. The 10% that the Levi separates and gives to the Kohen, which we call Trumas Meiser, here we can make the distinction of vadai, certain, versus demai, versus doubt. because the Trumas Meiser is that, we didn't mention that the 10% that the Levi separates, he gives to the Kohen. Since it's coming from Meiser Rishon, the Demai possibility exists. So muzzling an animal while threshing Trumas Meiser of Demai would be a violation of Los Aslam Shorbedisho. Muzzling an animal while threshing the Trumas Meiser tithe separated by the Levi, given to a Kohen of certain the certain tithing, would not result in the prohibition of Los Aslam Shorbedisho. As we indicated before, it's not called Disho, your own grains. The crown marking that you see is introduced on the side under the Mivneh, the structural note, which reads, She'elois be'inyan lo safsom. We'll see questions raised, one over here, and a few lines later, another question concerning lo safsom. And when you get to Amud Beis, we've numbered, by the way, to the side of the Gemara text, these crown shapes, so you can see a 3 and 4 on Omid Beis. So we have a total of 4 questions regarding the topic of Lo Safsam, of not the prohibition of muzzling the animal while threshing. Ba mine me Rav Sheshes. The question was asked of Rav Sheshes. Before we read any further, just glance at the side once again at, under the Nosei, the topic heading, which reads Mal Lachsim Para. Would there be a prohibition in muzzling an animal she'etzem achila shehatvua shidasha mazikala, where the eating of the grains for this particular animal will be negative, have negative effects, be injurious to the animal? We'll maybe make reference to digestive problems that would result from the animal eating those grains that it is currently threshing. You can imagine animal allergies to barley. Let's see now the Gemara. Ba'ami name Rav Sheshes. The question was asked of Rav Sheshes. Hoisa oicheles umatrezes mahu. The animal would eat and experience a loosening of its bowels. We can maybe refer to it as a diarrhea. And Rashi makes reference to, he uses a French word for this. In the end, he mentions that the threshing of the eating of wheat on the part of this particular animal causes the matrezes phenomenon. Now, mahu, what is the din if one were to muzzle up an animal while it's threshing wheat when the eating of the wheat would not be good for it? Mishum, we have two sides of the question. Do you say mishum demali lahu? Do we say that the reason for prohibiting muzzling is because the eating is mali, beneficial for the animal? And in this case, it's not beneficial. Hence, there would be no prohibition of muzzling, odilma. Or maybe the issue of muzzling and prohibition thereof is for the following. The chazio mitzdara, an animal simply views the grains that it is working on, and if it's muzzled, it will have pain. It'll be a tension and pain for the animal not to be able to eat it. Somehow one gets to the thinking that there isn't much difference between animals and people, where many cases that a person will eat something that he knows is not good for himself, but he nevertheless has a great desire to eat from it, even though the results aren't so healthy. So same thing with the animal. It sees it, and it would have pain if it's not accessible. It'll be experienced tsar, pain and tension in not being able to eat from it, regardless of the negative results. And therefore, if that's the basis of the prohibition of lo sachsom, it would apply even in the case where it's oicheles umatrezes. Omar lehu Rav Sheshes tenisua. Rav Sheshes, who was asked the question, says you can resolve it from the following Tanaic source. You can see, by the way, that the quote that we're going to read now is from what that which we saw above. And that's what you can, if you navigate with the arrow that you see to the side of the more text, you'll see from where this source comes. Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai Omer, Mevi Karshinim V'Toilulah, the case described above was involved in an animal that was threshing. Spoke about Truma and Meiser, where there isn't any Torah prohibition of muzzling. So therefore, technically speaking, you could muzzle up the animal. But Rav Shimon Bar Yochai says, don't do that. Rather, bring karshinim, a certain type of, we'll call animal feed, and hang it around the animal's neck. And while it's threshing the grains, it will eat from the basket hung around its neck. And here the main point is added, shakarshinim yofos lo min hakol. Karshinim are good for the animal. Shma mino, so from this we conclude, mishum demali lo, who? Shma mino, that the prohibition of muzzling is because the eating of the grains is good for the animal. And therefore, in our case, where the eating of the grains is not good for the animal, there would be no prohibition of muzzling. Ibaya laho. Another question. On the side, we have a topic heading. Amira lenochri benogea leisur loisaso. The, we'll say, instructions or orders mentioned to an idol worshiper regarding the prohibition, as it has effects, we'll say, on the prohibition of losasa. Now, this concept of amira lenochri, you might be familiar with it from Hilchos Shabbos, where we know that if you have an action that a Jew is not allowed to do, to or an act that a Jew is not allowed to perform on Shabbos, one is likewise not allowed to turn to a non-Jew and ask him to do it. So if it is prohibited, let us say, to turn on electric lights by flipping a switch to turn on lights on Shabbos, you cannot ask a non-Jew, would you please turn on the light for me? Now, we'll talk about that phenomenon of Amira Lenochri in the context of muzzling. The Gemara says, the question was raised, Mahu Shiyomar Odom Lenochri, can a Jew say to a non-Jew, Chasoim Porosi V'doish Bo, take my animal, muzzle it up, and thresh your threshing with it. Tosfos offers a different explanation, and that is that the Amira Lenochri, where a Jew is saying to the non-Jew, muzzle up my animal and thresh my grains with it. The Gemara continues. Mi amrinon, ki amrinon amira lenochri shvus. Do we say that the prohibition of amira lenochri, which is a rabbinic prohibition, to request of a non-Jew to do something that would otherwise be prohibited to the Jew, hani mili, this is applicable leinyan Shabbos, when it comes to the laws of Shabbos, the isur skila, where the prohibition of Shabbos for a Jew who violates Shabbos would potentially be subjected to court execution through skila, through stoning. Avol chasimo de isur lav, threshing with a muzzled animal, which in the worst case scenario is a negative command that does not carry with it an execution penalty. Lo, the prohibition of Amira Lenochri with reference to something that is a mere lav, that is only a simple negative command, so the rabbis didn't impose their rabbinic restriction of Amira Lenochri, requesting the action to be done by the Gentile in such a case when you're dealing with a mere Isur lav, o dilma lo shna, or possibly we make no distinction between Isur skila and Isur lav. So now, a series of attempts to answer this. The house shape that you see is introduced on the side under our mivne, our structural note, The Toshma is abbreviated in the first case. Nisyonos lahachria leesor amira lenochri beinyan lo sachsom afopi shirak isulav. These are attempts to decide the matter in the direction of prohibition and forbidding amira lenochri, even though we're dealing with a matter that is a mere negative command. Ta shma nochri hadosh beporoso shel Yisrael eino over mishum bal tachsom. This is a quote from that which we saw above, eight lines from the top, in the Tanaic source, that a nochri, a non-Jew who threshes with a Jewish-owned animal while muzzled, is not in violation of lo sachsom. Now we infer from here, mevarhu the lovar, an actual violation doesn't exist. However, ha isura ika. However, there is a prohibition. Now you'll ask, what's the difference between a violation and a prohibition? Well, violation would result in lashing. The violation of a negative command results in malchus. So we're pointing out here that there wouldn't be actual lashing applied, but there is a prohibition. So what do we see from here? That Amira Lenochri, asking a Nochri to plow with a Jewish-owned animal in a muzzled state is prohibited. The Gemara rejects this conclusion. Bedin hu, technically speaking, de isura nami leka. There isn't even a prohibition. So you'll ask, why then does the why were we taught the source in that fashion? The idi detana seifa, and since the continuation of that source that we quoted above says the Yisrael Hadosh Beporosu Shel Nochri Over, a Jew who uses a Gentile owned animal for threshing while muzzled is in actual violation with the accompanying punishment of Malchus. There in the Seifa the term Over appeared. Tana Resha, the Resha used the expression Eino Over. He is not in violation, but not with any intent to draw an inference from that there is an Iser. Toshma de Sholchule Lavua de Shmuel. Sholchule is they sent to Avua de Shmuel. Later in the Gemara we'll see this is a reference to a group of people referred to as Bnei Marova, people from Eretz Yisrael. They sent to Avua de Shmuel the following question. Holin Turi, these oxen, we continue at the top of Omid Beis. De ganvin armoi ume ganchin yashoin mahu. First we'll offer a literal translation, but then elaborate. That are ganvin armoi, literally that are taken or stolen by idol worshippers. Umeganchin, these oxen are then sterilized. And sterilization of an ox results in it being a more productive work animal, more productive in its plowing capabilities. Mahu, what is the din? Now we really left out central information that Rashi does reveal. So let's look at Rashi at the top. Umeganchin Yason, umesarsino. Some we mentioned that they were sterilized. The achakach matos yirin lebailim, and then these idol worshippers that took the Jewish-owned animal, sterilized. And by the way, sterilizing an animal is strictly prohibited by Torah law. In this case, the Gentiles, the armoi, took the animals and then returned them to the Jewish owners. Umeavas ba'alav Yisrael gonvo hanochri shumakiro, and it's actually this. What happened is actually a function of the fondness that the non-Jew has for his Jewish friend, that he takes the Jewish animal, sterilizes it, returns it to the Jew that's his friend, that he knows, that he's familiar with. He does this, he sterilizes it so as to improve its plowing capabilities. So the B'nai Marava sent to Avuna Shmuel, what is the law regarding this situation? Sholach Lehu, Rav Avuna Shmuel sent back, Ha'arama is Avid Behu. This is an act of, we'll say, circumvention. Harama literally would have to do with an act of deceit, but it's an act of trickery. So in order to circumvent the prohibition of sterilizing, so this is what took place. It's not something that we welcome, to put it mildly. And therefore, he says, an act of haroma took place, a'arimu alayhu v'yizdabnun. The law takes one step ahead and says, if that's what you did, then, in other words, if that's what transpired, then the Jew who gets his animal back must sell the animal. Rashi, third line from the top, says, v'yizdabnun, v'lo yehene Yisrael be'avera. The Jew should not benefit from the sin. Who also kidei sheyofel lachrush? This was done in order to improve the animal's harisha, plowing capabilities. Lefikach yikansuhu shelo yachrush bo. Therefore, we fine him in so far as saying you will not be able to plow with that animal. Almo. Therefore, you see from this, from Avuah de Shmuel's response, that even in an Isur Lav situation, the prohibition that's characterized as a mere negative command, requesting of Gentiles to do that act would be prohibited. Without being too literal over here, we didn't see a formal requesting on the part of the Jews in their turning to the non-Jews, but nevertheless, it seems to be something that on a certain level was expected to take place. And additionally, there's another consideration of what we call being nana, benefiting from an action that you yourself would not be allowed to do. And all of that comes under the general heading of the Isur, the Lav of, the Isur of Amir al-Nahri. So the Gemara feels from this story we can conclude that there is an Isur Amir al-Nahri when it comes to Baal Lo Safsum as well. The Gemara rejects this. Omar Rav Papa. B'nei Marova, those are the ones that sent the question to Avuah Shmuel. Savri law Karebi Chidka. They are of the opinion like that of Rabbi Chidka. Diomar, Rabbi Chidka says, B'nei Noach mitzuven al hasirus. B'nei Noach, a reference to the entire Gentile community, are commanded regarding the prohibition of sterilizing animals. It's well known that B'nei Noach have a much more limited list of mitzvahs, of commandments that they are obligated to fulfill. Even so, within the realm of their very limited list of prohibitions, Rabbi Chidka holds that B'nai Noach are prohibited in sterilizing animals. And with that in mind, you're not dealing with something that's prohibited just to the Jews. It's prohibited for the goy, for the Nochri himself, to do this, to sterilize an animal. The Ko'avri, and the Jew who requests of the Gentile to sterilize the animal, the Jew is in violation of Mishum Lifteiver, Lo Sitei Michshol, literally, do not place a stumbling block in front of the blind. So, since it's a commandment that the guy himself, that the Nochri himself is obligated to observe, the Jew has no right, he's strictly prohibited in asking the guy to do something that for the Gentile himself is an actual prohibition. But something that a Nochri is not commanded in, like muzzling up animals, maybe the Jew could request of the guy to muzzle up the Jewish-owned animal and thresh with it. Regarding the obligation to sell the animal, namely a reference to Avuah de Shmuel's legal ruling, Sovar Rava Lameimar, Rava thought to say, Yimachru Lishchita. He said, we saw above that something deceitful was done, therefore we're going to do to you something that's, we'll say, of a fine knas, to fine the individual for that violation. Therefore, we imposed the sale of such an animal. Sale, but for what purposes? So Rava thinks that you, the owner of the animal that the Nochri muzzled, you shall sell it for meat purposes, sell it for slaughtering. The money that you'll get for the sale of an animal for slaughtering is less than the value of an animal sold for plowing purposes. So Rava's thinking was that part of the fine is that you're going to sell the animal and get less than you would have been able to get otherwise. Omar Le Abaye. Abaye, responding to Rava, says, Dayon. Dayon means it's enough. Shekanasta Le Mechira, that you impose the fine of requiring him to sell the animal. It's like it's enough that we impose that upon him and not expect him to also take a loss in the sale. There's a Rashi just across from here. Dayan shekanasta leh mechira, the lo torach kule hai elo shiachrosh bo. All of the what took place here, the sterilizing of the animal, all of that trouble was only for him to be able to plow with it. And now by requiring him to sell the animal to someone else, for how lo tiskay machshav osay, the owner's original intent is not being fulfilled. He's not going to be benefiting by plowing with this upgraded animal. We continue in the Gemara. Pshita benoi gadol ki achir domi. When we speak about the requirement of selling the animal to your adult son is like selling it to an outsider, and you have fulfilled the requirement, you fulfilled the fine by selling it to your own son, provided he's an adult. But no, Katan, my, what about transferring ownership of the animal to your minor son? Rav Achi Osar, Rav Ashi Shori. So we have a disagreement between Rav Achi and Rav Ashi on that matter. Mremar Umar Zutra, the Amri Law, another version of names is Hano Tre Hasidi, pious individuals. Instead of we don't see actual names here, but we see that these two Hasidi, two pious people, Machlefi Adodi. If these two people had animals that were taken by the Nochrim and sterilized, so they would actually exchange each one's animals with the other. Boy Rami Barhama, the crown marking, just to remind you, is a continuation in the series of questions regarding the general topic of Lo Sachsom. On the side we have a topic heading, the Nose, which reads Rami Barhama Male Sidro Shel Shelos Beinyan Lo Sachsom. Rami Barhama, within the Gemara, we already made reference to the general crown scheme of marking, but within this, number 3, he raises a series of questions regarding the prohibition of muzzling. Hameshutif Lekulam, that which is, we'll say, a common denominator with regard to all of these questions, Shabahema Eneno Chasuma B'machzeh Mamish Al Piyah, there isn't a formal or actual muzzle on its mouth. Aval Mishum Tanoim Svivotiim, because if we'll say circumstantial conditions, Eino Ocheles, the animal is not eating. V'Have Dumya D'Chasuma, it's as if it's muzzled up. Just like a muzzled animal is incapable of eating that which it's threshing, there are other situations, other circumstances that the result is the same, even without a formal muzzle around its mouth. We turn now to the Gemara, noticing there is an immediate appearance of short bracketed sections. These bracketed sections are for initial, we'll say, skipping purposes. And within these two bracketed sections, we'll find the text that's not accurate in the eyes of the Gemara, and hence the correction of the text appears after the brackets. So, boy, Romi Barchama, if we skip momentarily, Yoshav lo kaitz b'fiyo mahu, a thorn that got stuck in the animal's mouth, and you're gonna plow with the animal it while it's in that state where it can't eat because the thorn got stuck in its mouth. Can you plow with the animal? You didn't fasten a formal muzzle around its mouth. A thorn on its own got stuck in the animal's mouth. Can I go? Okay, can I continue? Can I use it, or must I remove the thorn before plowing with it? Or maybe there's no mitzvah, there's no command to remove the thorn that got stuck on its own. Now we go back over the skipped section, and where Romi Barchama asks, "Hoshiv la koitz b'fiyah mahu." Here the grammar is of central importance. Hoshiv means you put a thorn in its mouth, rendering the animal incapable of eating. What is the din? Can I plow with the animal after I placed a thorn in its mouth? The Gemara asks, what kind of question? I think it's so obvious. Hoshiv. Hoshiv law. You put a thorn in its mouth in a proactive fashion. Chasim alisi. That's a full-fledged form of muzzling. What difference does it make whether it's a store-bought muzzle or you muzzle it, prevented it from eating through another means? You proactively muzzled it. Ella, what is there room to ask about? Yoshav lo kais b'fiyamau. A thorn got stuck in the animal's mouth, preventing it from eating. Is there a mitzvah in order for me to use the animal in this state for plowing for me to remove the thorn or not? Or I can use the animal even though it's is in practical terms is not going to be eating. Once again, we have a bracket section. If you skip, you'll see question number two, Rovatz lo ari mi bachutz mahu. And there's number three, Hemid Binovchutz. A series of questions that are to be raised. But before we get to that, we see in the brackets, Hirbitz lo ari mi bachutz mahu. You placed a lion right outside the area that where the ox will be threshing. You can just imagine an ox seeing a lion that you put there. The state of fright that will overcome the ox will cause it such that it will not eat. And some for whatever animal reason, it will, however, continue threshing, but it will not eat. As far as animal psychology is concerned, we'll leave that for other experts to analyze. But what you have done is you've created a situation in a proactive form. You brought the lion there to where the animal is going to thresh. And as we said, as a result of the fear that will overcome the animal, it will not eat. What is the din? Can I use the animal for threshing? The Gemara says, like we said before, Hirbitz law. What, you brought the lion and to lay there opposite the ox? Chasim ayasi, that's total muzzling. That's just as serious a violation as formal muzzling. Ella, rather, what is there room to ask about? Rav Atzla Ariba Chutzmau. A lion came on its own and crouched and lay down near the site where you're gonna bring your ox to thresh. Can you thresh with it over there? Can you thresh while a lion that came on its own is lying nearby? Another question. Hamid bino mibachutz mahu. You took the calf of the animal and had it standing outside. What is the din? We'll just make the assumption that in a situation like that where the calf, the offspring of the animal is standing nearby, the parent animal, the mother animal, is not going to be so interested in eating. Let's say the animal that you're going to thresh with happened to be very thirsty. And again, in context, we'll conclude that an animal that's overcome with thirst is not going to eat. You spread out a katavlaya. What's a katavlaya? So Rashi explains right across from here, or sholuk. It's boiled leather, boiled skin, animal skin. Vabehema maleches al gabov. The animal, while threshing, will be walking upon this leather, we'll call it this leather sheet that's covering the grains. And Rashi says, v'eino roya sadisha. And in doing so, the animal doesn't see the grains that it's working on. Mi karina be bidisho alo. Is that considered the violation of losasam shor bidisho while it's threshing or not? Pshot meho chado. Let us conclude from this list of questions one of them. Specifically, from a Tanaic source that we'll see shortly, let us conclude question number 5, the issue of Paras Katavlaya. Desanya, the Tanaic source says, Rashoi Baal Pora Lahariv Porosoi Kidei Shetoicha Min Adisha Harbe. This is referring to an animal that was rented out. So you have an animal owner that rented its animal, his animal, to someone that wants to thresh with it. So now the owner of the animal is allowed to, we'll say, starve his animal so that the animal will eventually eat its fill from the grains that it is threshing, that the renter is using this animal for threshing. So in such a case, the owner saves money. The amount that he would have had to feed the animal will consume by eating the other guy's grains. The rashoi baal habayis lahatir pki omir lifnei habehema kidei shelo toichal min adisha harbe. An owner of an animal is allowed to lahatir is to undo a bundle of straw. The straw is much cheaper than actual grains. And the initial thinking over here is that the balabayas is going to be spreading the straw on top of actual grains that are being threshed. Rashi, across from here, says, Paki Omir, Kashin Shel Shibon, it's the stalks of grains, She Nidoshu, that the stalks of grains that were already threshed, Vave Kepores Katavlaya, and it's, in this sense, it's like the case of spreading the leather sheet over the grains. Let us conclude from here that it would be allowed. So we want to create a parallel between spreading grain stalks over the grains, like spreading a leather sheet over the grains. The Gemara, though, says you can't conclude a leniency from this source. Shiny Hossam, that case is different. The Ka'achla, if you take a straw and spread it out, the animal will eat from it. It will be eating, maybe much cheaper stuff, but it will be eating. Not so in the case of a leather sheet spread over the grains, where the animal won't be eating at all. Another explanation of the source, rendering it insufficient as a means of resolving our question, is as follows. What this source is talking about regarding the straw, Rashoi Balabayas, Lahatib Ki Omir, Lufne Behemo Meikora, Kedeshaloto Chalharbe Min Hadisha. The owner of the animal is allowed to feed the animal at the outset straw, and the animal will fill its stomach with straw and have no appetite for eating from the more expensive grains while he is threshing with this animal. So it's permissible to let's say limit the grain consumption of the animal through this means. But you can see from here it has nothing to do with spreading something over the grains that are being threshed. It could be, there's room to say that this second approach represents a greater stringency than the approach before. According to this second approach, there wouldn't be any heter of spreading stuff over the grains that are actually being threshed. The best that the owner can do is to feed it beforehand cheaper stuff. But when it comes to the actual grains themselves, according to this second approach, nothing is allowed to be spread over them, even the straw. Rabbi Yoinason, may Rabbi Simoi. We're going to point out ahead of time that this Rabbi Yoinason is a kohen. He asks of Rabbi Simoi, Chosma mi bachutz mahu. Let us say a man muzzled up the animal outside, mi bachutz, before it came to thresh. What is the din? Shor b'dishoi omar rachmon v'ho lav b'dishohu. The pasuk said, "Lo sachsom shor b'disho." Do not muzzle up the ox while plowing. You know, it's in the midst of its threshing. Not to muzzle up the animal in the midst of its threshing. That's what is prohibited. Here, in this case, that Rabbi Yonason is raising as a question, that didn't take place. He didn't muzzle it up in the midst of the threshing. He muzzled it up before. Oh, Dilma, or maybe. What the Torah is prohibiting is lo sadosh bechasima amar rachmana. Do not thresh with a muzzled animal. Well, and if that be the case, so even though the muzzling took place before it entered the area of the threshing, while you're threshing, though, it is muzzled, and maybe that's what the Torah intends as being prohibited. So Rabbi Yonason the Kohen raised this question, and now the answer. Notice we have a long answer marking. Omar Le, Rav Simoi responds. Mi beis avicha atolome. Literally from your father's house. Your father's house is a reference to the laws that apply to a Kohen. From those laws, I will be able to answer your question. The pasuk says regarding kohanim in their service in the Beis Hamikdash. It says in the verse, Yayin v'shechar lo sishte lo al teisht ata uvonecha itcha bevoachem. The kohanim are warned, are prohibited from imbibing, from consuming intoxicating, intoxicating wine beverages. While involved in the service of the Beis Hamikdash. So the pasuk we just read, if you want to read it literally, it says bevoachem. That would mean while entering the Beis HaMikdash. In other words, if you read the pasuk literally, it would come out then the drinking of wine on the part of Kohen would be prohibited only as they enter the Beis HaMikdash. So we ask, is that really the case? Bevoachem hu de'aser ha mishta umayel shari? Could you possibly imagine that only when entering it's prohibited, but drinking before, becoming intoxicated and then entering would be okay? But the pasuk says, "Ulahavdil beina kodesh ubeina chayil omar rachmona." The pasuk in warning against the drinking of the intoxicating beverage, when drinking the wine, describes that the kohen needs to be capable of making distinctions between the sanctified and the profane and the common, and in a state of intoxication, whether it's when you entered the Beis HaMikdash or you became drunk before, what difference does it make? The same problem exists. Ela ma hosom bishas bia lo tehe shichus. Just like over there, it means that when you're entering, you shall not be in a state of inebriation. Hachanami, so too here regarding threshing, bishas disha, when threshing, lo tehe chasima, it shall not be muzzled. So that the resolution of the question is then like the Bayes possibility we saw above when we presented the two sides of the question, like the second approach, that you shall not use an animal that is muzzled while threshing. Tonu Rabbanan, hachosem es hapara, a person who muzzles an animal but doesn't thresh with it. Vamizave bikilayim, he latches two different kinds of animals onto a cart, but he doesn't draw the cart with the two different animals. Potter, for these two, we'll say actions, he is exempt. He's not in violation of any sin. The ena loika ela dosh umani bilvad. There is no lashing other than for one who threshes with the muzzled animal, or one who draws the cart physically, or in a proactive way, draws the cart with the two different kinds of animals. We didn't give background to that, but there's a Torah prohibition of drawing a cart with two different kinds of animals. So just by attaching the animals to the cart, there's no sin in that. But after attaching them but drawing a cart with two different kinds of animals attached to the cart, that is what is sinful. Itmar. Before we continue, we glance at the side. We have a Nosei topic heading that says Chosma Bekoil. You caused Chasima through your voice, through, let's say, a shout. Or you drew a cart using the two different kinds of animals, the kilayim, bekoil. You said giddy up. In other words, you didn't sit on the cart with reins and a whip, but rather you vocally caused the drawing of the cart to take place. Haim akima svasov, is the movement of your lips nechshav maisa, is that considered an action, v'chayav malchus? And if you have the violation of a negative command through an action, that results in lashing. Oy, lo, or maybe akimas fosov, the movement of your lips is not considered an action. And according to the general Torah principle, there is a machlokas tanayim, but according to the general rabbinic, the opinion of the rabbonan, a lav shein bo maisa, a negative command that is violated, but there is no action that is the cause of the violation, there is no malchus, there's no lashing for it. So these two scenarios of Chasima Bekoil or Hanhoga Bekoil, Rabbi Yochanan says Chayev, and Reish Lakish says Potter. The Gemara, Itmar. Chosma Bekoil. Imagine the following scenario. An animal is threshing grains. The animal is not muzzled. It's bending over to eat from the grains that it's threshing. And you let out a shout, causing a fright to the animal, and as a result does not eat. So it was about to eat, and you caused it not to eat through your voice. Veniga bekoil, you weren't holding the reins and the whip or the ox goad that you use for motivating animals to move forward, but rather you screamed out, like we said before. You said giddy up, and that caused the movement of the animals. That were the two different kinds of animals that were attached to the cart to draw the cart. And hence you have a cart being drawn in a kilayim state, and that taking place as a result of your voice. You're emitting something of a vocal nature. Rabbi Yochanan Omar Chayav. Rabbi Yochanan says that that constitutes a violation of, in the case of the threshing, lo sachsam sorbetisho, and in the case of the kilayim, of the prohibition of drawing a cart with two different kinds of animals. Reish Lakish Amar Potter. Reish Lakish says there is no violation. Rabbi Yochanan Amar Chayav, that there is a violation. Akimas piv havi maisa, the movement of your lips is considered an action, and therefore it's classified as a lav shiyesh bo maisa, a negative command violated through an action. And therefore, there is malchus, there is lashing as a punishment. Reish Lakish Amar Potter, Kola lo havi maisa. Reish Lakish says there is exemption. Emission of a voice, of a sound through your mouth, it does not constitute an action. Esve, Rabbi Yochanan, le Reish Lakish. Rabbi Yochanan challenges Reish Lakish. We continue at the top of Daf Tzadi Aleph Omed Aleph. The source that we're about to read, that you can see at the top of Tzadi Aleph Amud Aleph, deals with the prohibition called Tmura. Tmura is an act of replication of sacrificial sanctity that exists on an animal dedicated as a sacrifice. So that if you have an animal that you have dedicated, you were makdish as a korban, that you dedicated, sanctified to serve as a sacrifice. And then next to it, you have an unsanctified animal. And you say that I want to replicate the sanctity onto this this non-sanctified animal. That is called tmura. One is not allowed to do that. Now, the source says, lo she'odom rashoi lohomir. Not as if a person is allowed to do it. Eloshim Hamir Mumar. But if a person does do this, he does that act of replication, which is, I should say act, maybe that's a bad word, but he does the replication, which is a vocal experience. He verbalizes his desire to replicate the Kedusha. If he does so, Mumar means it takes place, that the second animal now becomes sanctified. For Sofeg is Rabbayim, and this is really the main point. And for doing that, there is Malchus. There is is to be lashed the 40 or 39 lashings. Term Arboyim means 40, but it really is a reference to 39, which is a number that's up till 40, but not including. What do we see from here, though? We see that vocal speech results in lashing, which would seem to indicate that that speech is considered a maisa. Omar Le, Reish Lakish answers, Ha Mani, this source that you just quoted, Rebbe Yehuda He. It's authored by Rebbe Yehuda, a minority point of view, the Omar, that is of the opinion, Lav She'ein Boi Maisa Loikin Olav. A negative command that is violated without an actual action, nevertheless, results in the punishment of lashing. So that's Rebbe Yehuda's opinion. But in general, Reish Lakish stands by his word that chasma b'kol or niga b'kol would be exempt, no lashing, because kol is akima sfasiv, is not considered a maisa. So it's a non-maisa. At this point then, as far as Reish Lakish is concerned, both Reb Yudah and the Chachamim hold it's a non-maisa. It's just that the Tana Reb Yudah, according to, as far as the Gemara is concerned, the Tana Reb Yudah happens to hold that for violation of a negative command, even through a non-maisa, through a non-action, nevertheless results in malchus. The Gemara asks, you'll notice we have a long question here. Umi Motzis Mukmis Lo Kareb Yehuda, can you set up the source at the top concerning Tamura as authored by Reb Yehuda? V'akotani Reisha, in the beginning of the source that we didn't see quoted, now it's quoted, namely, we saw the end of the source quoted above, but at the beginning, it says, Hakol Mamirin, all are, we'll say, empowered with the capacity of creating tamura, echad ha'anoshim ve'echad ha'anoshim, whether it be menfolk or women, v'havinon bo, and we ask, hakul asuim, the expression hakul, what does that come to include? Very often in Tanaic sources, when the word kul or hakul appears, it's coming to include something beyond the actual text. What is being included? Lasuye Yoresh Udalok Reb Yehuda, to include the case of someone who inherited his father's sacrifices. A man had set aside animals, had dedicated something as a sacrifice, and before it was offered in the Beis Hamikdash, the owner died, and here you have an heir. If he declares tamura regarding an animal sanctified by his father, the tamura takes hold. And that is not in accordance with Reb Yehuda. We continue in the Gemara, De'ik Reb Yehuda, Ha'amar Yoresh Eino Meimer, Yoresh Eino Somech. Reb Yehuda says that a Yoresh does not accomplish tamura. And another halacha we don't have to focus on right now has to do with Somech, or placing one's hands on the head of an animal prior to its being sacrificed. As a sacrifice, what's the point? Since the source at the top, which spoke about sofeg es arboyim for tamura, has as its ratio, the first part of that source spoke about hakol mamirin, and that comes to include a yoresh. Well, then the source can't be authored by Reb Yehuda. The Gemara responds: Hai tana sover lo kavosei b'chada upolig ole b'chada. This is what Reish Lakish will ultimately have to say. The source at the top concerning Tamura is authored by a Tana that agrees with Reb Yehuda on one point and disagrees with him on another point. So it's authored by, once again, a minority opinion. An opinion that holds like Reb Yehuda regarding Malkus lashing for non-action, lashing even for Dibor, for speech. The Tana disagrees with Reb Yehuda concerning Yoresh, namely that the author of the source above will tell you that a Yoresh is capable of doing Tamura. In that respect, it's not like Reb Yehuda. However, says Reish Lakish, the Rabbanan will say that for mere speech, for a lav shein bo maisa, I should say speech, they will classify as ein bo maisa, and in accordance with their opinion, there is no malchus. Reb Yehuda, just to repeat, Reb Yehuda, on the other hand, agrees with the classification of speech being a non-maisa, but he holds that lav shein bo maisa loikin alav. Before we conclude, let us remind you that if you wish to be in touch with us before we in order to access marked Gemaras, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.